G'day, and welcome to the Pandemi Show. Stories of the pandemi for people living in the pandemi. No one is alone on the Pandemi Show. Thanks for joining us as we unite humanity through stories of hope, connection, and community in the face of the global pandemi. We are all in this together, and we're glad you're here together with us. Thanks for taking a moment to like, subscribe, and follow the Pandemi Show on social media.
Welcome back to the Pandemi Show as we celebrate International Workers' Day. We have a very special guest today. Who are you?
I'm Gavin Stevens. I'm a comedian. I'm a comedian. That's the best way to put it.
I'm very grateful that Gavin was able to join us here today as we recognize and celebrate May Day and International Workers' Day. I'm a fan of Gavin's comedy, his writing, and his podcast, Uncolonized Podcast. We're in for a great show, friends of the pandemi, and we're transcending time and space to Hamilton, Ontario, on the banks of Lake Ontario, where Gavin lives. And I should just say, I am recording this interview on the Upper Canada Treaty, the traditional home of the Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabe, and Chung'unktown, keepers of the deer. Gavin, can you just tell us, what was your life like as an entertainer in before times?
I kind of just going along. I was at a point where I just released my CD. My CD release during the pandemic. But I was just going along, working on material, touring for a bit. I just got back from being in LA for like a week or so. And then I got a job. I got like a day job. I was doing some delivery work, which was very fun for this donut store. I really enjoyed it. It was Donut Monster is a donut, like a local donut place store in Hamilton. So I was doing that for a bit. And then a week into that, everything just shut down.
Yeah. March 2020.
I remember going into work and like nervous about, because I had a cough and I was so scared. It felt like, you know, Scarlet Letter kind of deal. But yeah, that's everything shut down.
It was weird how it all of a sudden became more acceptable to fart than cough.
It's so true. Yeah.
How did you find the lockdowns impacted you as a creative person? Did it impact your writing? Do you pivot it online?
I didn't do anything. Like I got into coding because coding was another way to express myself, I guess, artistically, but it was also like, I really enjoy the idea of like the logic of computers. Like it's just, you're the one that's wrong. It's kind of like stand-up is like the best way to do stand-up is like, you have to have a strong self-awareness to do it well. Like you have to be able to go, well, this isn't right. And that's, I'm fooling myself. And coding just, you never fool yourself. It was kind of nice to like, because I tell comics this all the time, was like, taking the value, like when you're a comic, you are the product. So you're the value. So it was nice not to be to have people put their value on me. It was just, I don't know if that sounds too convoluted or pretentious, but it was just this like, oh, I don't have to be anything. I can just exist. And I didn't really miss stand-up until I started doing it again. I was like, oh, I missed this. And then it locked down and then I did and then it opened up again. I was like, oh, I missed this again. It was a nice little break in terms of that. I wouldn't say it was a nice break because it was horrible, but it was just like, oh, I can breathe a bit.
Did you find the initial lockdown or any of the subsequent lockdowns impacted your relationship with nature positively?
Yeah, I got into bike riding and I started doing more hiking and stuff like that. I think during the pandemic, because of riding, I was just like, I got to the point where I'm like, I would rather not have a car. Like that kind of, like just being outside for me is like, you have less chances of being disconnected. So you're not as angry. Like when you're in a car, you get angry because yeah. You're not connected to people. But when you're like outside, you're just like, oh, I have to respect people's space and stuff like that. Yeah. But it was also nerve-wracking going out and people just like walking up on you. And you're like, and I also had a lot of anxiety from that stuff. People just coming next to me. And I'm like, hey, back up.
It's weird because there was so much uncertainty at the beginning of this. I remember during that initial lockdown, and I was bubbled with my mom and her boyfriend. both are seniors with some health stuff. And yeah, it's like PPE, personal protective equipment. Where can I find some? I put the word out to some people in my network that I was looking for PPE for high risk seniors. And I ended up in Toronto at the mall beside the horse track. And I bought a pack of 10 N95 PPE masks for my mom and her partner. And there's just so much uncertainty and so little resources to protect ourselves. But it seems like since the first season of the pandemic, we've adapted. We know about public health, wash your hands, physical distance. It's safer to gather outside and interact outside, all of those types of things, lots more information. And then now with the vaccine, thank goodness for the vaccines, because even when the numbers get super high, the hospitals don't seem to be at the brink like they would be if we didn't have the vaccines.
Well, I mean, they're still like, hey, the way that our government in Ontario is talking is like, hey, it's fine. And it's not fine. Like, the hospital is still like, we can't ramp up the way they're making it sound like we can ramp up. But yes, it is much better. We're better. But I don't really think our government helped us too much. I think we could have done this a lot better.
100%. And this is the time in the pandemic, this sixth wave. I know more people than ever that have COVID. Yeah. Like so many of my friends.
Yeah, I got it 2-3 weeks ago.
It's like more of us are getting sick and people are getting seriously ill, but they're able to manage at home more, it seems.
A lot of workers, people who couldn't take time off, worked in factories, they had to go in. So, but I just feel like they didn't, like, I mean, it's a conservative government. So I just feel like they needed things to be open. They needed things to be, people to be shopping. And like, that was conflicting with even the fact that we weren't prepared. We could have been building our own vaccines in this country and we sold it off. And it was just crazy. It was just all sorts of like, what are we doing?
My sense of the Ontario government is that they're more interested in protecting the interests of the wealthy and the billionaire and millionaire class than doing anything for the working class people. And it seemed that it was the federal government that did all the heavy lifting, protecting families. And as the pandemic went on and more of the kind of extreme anti-tax people said, why are we giving these handouts to people? The support dried up. And I was hoping that the pandemic was going to lead to the universal basic income, which could address so many of our problems.
Well, it's like, I'm just the NDP really pushed our government into getting stuff for us. Like but you're right. It was people complaining about handouts, especially the people who are complaining about handouts. And they're like, you're talking about the wealthy and people who own businesses. They're getting handouts. They get handouts all the time. It's ridiculous.
It's interesting how people get caught up in support for low-income people, but they're oblivious to corporate welfare and corporate subsidies. And it burns me up that the government gave out pandemic support to retirement facilities. And what did they do? They turned around and paid out dividends and they were privatizing public wealth. I think about this trucker convoy and it turns out that a lot of people that have participated in the trucker convoy got government support in the first couple waves of COVID. Those people,
their owners,
they didn't have any support. Then by this time, February 2022, there was no support for these people. And I think so many people were frustrated, felt like they had a lack of control over their lives, and they kind of went sideways. We know what a debacle Ottawa turned into. And I know people that are against vaccine mandates that went, and guess what? They got COVID.
Yeah. It's like right-wing populism. Like a lot of those people, there's legitimate anger. Like there's legitimate reasons to be angry, but what they're being pointed in the wrong direction. Most of those truckers, like I saw a guy who was like, oh, my boss is paying me to take the time off to go. It's like, yes, they're paying you. These are all the petite bourgeoisie who also like most of the complaints from the trucking industry makes up the most like labor complaints in the country. I think they make up like 75% or something like that. But most of those complaints are from the same people that are owners of those companies. They're mainly like mom and pop shops that make up most of those complaints, like not paying labor or like contract work and things like that. So these people, it wasn't a labor movement. It just had the aesthetic of labor. But then you're getting a lot of people who are legitimately like feeling left behind or feeling out, like just feeling like the government's failed on them, which it's a legitimate argument. It's just the energy's pointing in the wrong direction.
Poor leadership. And so many people were alienated and left behind. And we had so many pandemics before the COVID rang all of our bells. Environmental degradation, how we treat our seniors, structural racism, persecution against minorities, the income inequality, the list goes on.
The housing market.
You make a good point about housing because the pandemic, real estate was cold the first couple months of the pandemic, and then it slowly took off and it seems to now have plateaued as a result of the Ukraine war and interest rate increases. But what alarms me, and I heard this on the Money Minute on CKWR 98.5, Canada's oldest community radio station, a third of houses in Canada are rental properties owned by other people.
Yes.
And when we talked to Nizwiz, the artist, he said that housing used to be a right, and now it's a commodity to be bought and sold. The first year of the pandemic, there were approximately 500 new billionaires created. And at the same time, approximately a billion more people fell below the poverty line. So much wealth disparity. If we could address income inequality, that could really address a lot of our other problems. One of your latest episodes of your podcast, you and your co-host were talking about some really successful developments in the labor world with the unionization of Amazon.
Yeah.
Some workers who were fired.
One guy
worried about COVID
and
conditions. And Amazon warehouses, they're like meat packers. It's closeness. People are very close together.
Yeah.
It's not the best conditions. And congratulations to the workers of Amazon that have said the future starts today and realize it's the people power that's going to make the world a better place.
Well, there seems to be like a trend in apparently with unions now. There's been an uptick in the popularity of the idea of unions. You're seeing with Starbucks, you're seeing with Amazon. So yeah, I mean, that was crazy. Like that, Amazon's been union busting for a long time. And same with Starbucks has been like really like they had, they were put like we talked about on a podcast about how they were like pulling individuals in to like to interrogate them about unions. And it just sounded crazy, or firing a whole bunch of people. We're in late stage capitalism. I think a lot of people are just like at the end of the rope. And it's just like, I can't afford to live. I can't afford to eat. What am I supposed to do? Again, going back to the housing crisis is like, I live in Hamilton and Hamilton used to be $150,000 to get you a house. Now it's like $1 million. It's like, where are you going to push people? Like, where are you going to keep putting people? Eventually people are going to be like, well, there's got to be alternatives to this system, right? Back to the housing thing too. Like most rentals, it's not even like people buying them. It's companies. It's like BlackRock they're buying them for, like you said, investments. And this happened in New York City in the 80s, as New York used to be a manufacturing city. And then they became real estate as the number one industry. I was just reading a book, I forget their name. It's about gentrification and how it works. And like, it's talking about what you were saying with like the housing stuff, but sorry, long way around the Amazon, Amazon union thing. And I think it's great that they did it.
And it's all connected. It's all connected. Yeah. And the inflation that we see in the housing market, we're seeing inflation across the board, but is it really inflation? Or is it just greed with more and more profits being sucked out of the system?
Yeah.
We saw here in Southern Ontario that frontline workers, grocery store workers, et cetera, were supposed to get pay raises as a result of government subsidies. If they got them at all, they were for a very short time. And meanwhile, all of those companies were pandemic winners, posting record high profits. You hear about the stock market having record gains over the pandemic.
Yep.
But my understanding is a lot of the growth in the stock market is a repression in wages at the frontline worker level. And the gig economy.
That's crazy.
The gig economy is something else we got to think about. All these Uber drivers and people that don't have 20 hours part-time or the 40-hour. The gig economy is another interesting area. Will it get unionized? And so many people now that we owe thanks to in our labor market are foreign workers, migrant workers. They're the heroes of the pandemic. And this gig economy stuff, I hope that gets unionized too, because we need to get more workers' rights and we need to address this income inequality, because the trickle-down theory is not working. And good thing, like the workers said at Amazon, thank goodness Jeff Bezos was too busy going to space because they had time to unionize here on Earth.
Yeah, he's like thanking everyone. It's like, yeah, because everyone's peeing in bottles in his factory. It just So in California, they have the, I guess, the B5 bill. I'm just looking it up. But that was what you're talking about, the unionization of it. It was to treat contract workers and independent workers as, I think, so they can get benefits and stuff like that. I think, like what we're seeing with Netflix, we're going to see something like that with Uber. That's my guess, because Uber has been like undercutting and undercutting and undercutting to make it seem like it's like to undercut the cab industry. They've been like, they've just been running at a loss for years, just complete loss. So at some point, their prices are going to jack right up. Because even now, like someone took an Uber and they're like, the prices didn't go up because of gas either, right? So they're paying the people the same amount of money, and the gas is on you as a driver. You can't keep gutting people, and then like it in the capitalist system, we're the, I guess for lack of a better term, the lab rats. We're the consumers. You can't keep gutting the consumers and then expect things to go. But I mean, that's how capitalism works. It's just a death cult. It's just going to go until everything's done.
Itself.
Yeah, just it's not. It's like with the environment, with every, a guy just lit himself on fire. And we were talking about Jeff Bezos the day he bought Elon Musk the day he bought Twitter. A man self-immolated in Washington to protest how we're at the point of we're too far with climate change. So yeah,
that's intense that people are so concerned. They're doing such drastic actions as lighting themselves on fire. And I think we've seen throughout history at times of great moral crisis, people do things like that to generate attention and to try to wake up others.
But he didn't get any attention. Elon Musk stole all the attention. Like I heard about it the night, like, cause it was all Elon Musk, Elon Musk, Elon Musk. He took up the news cycle, and then you find out this man lit himself on fire. It's like, well, my priority is off. Like I don't care if Elon Musk buys Twitter. It's like one billionaire buying something from other billionaires is fine with me.
This whole Twitter Elon Musk thing, to me, you hear Elon Musk saying, I'm going to be Mr. Free Speech. I bet there will be so much censorship on anything anti-Elon Musk and any of his business interests. But, you know, some people are going to believe the hype. The other thing, as a Star Trek fan, I am just shaking my head on this billionaire space race. So much has happened during the pandemic in space, the trip to Mars. China's doing all kinds of stuff. There's some interesting government cooperation on space. And then you've got this Ukraine war, and how will that impact the International Space Station? Will space really bring us together as a human race, or will it tear us apart further? It's fascinating. And as a Trekkie, and I find the value of Trek in that it helps us reimagine things differently. It helps us reimagine those time-honored problems of war and greed in a different way. So it's just interesting how we can reimagine some of the challenges that we continue to have historically.
Well, I mean, that's old Star Trek. New Star Trek's nothing like that. Like,
Discovery. They
don't know how to do. Yeah, they don't know how to do the stories like how they were done. Like my, I was Deep Space Nine. I watched, that was my Star Trek. I mean, I watched a TNG, but Deep Space Nine was like, I really love Deep Space Nine. Yeah, it's just different Star Trek. The book I was mentioning, it's P.E. Malkiewicz. It's called How to Kill a City. He also wrote another book, to your point about Elon Musk and freedom of speech, about how there's no freedom of speech. Basically, freedom of speech is something that rich people get, and he proves it throughout history. The founding fathers who owned slaves were for freedom of speech, right? Like,
but not for everyone.
We live in a country in Canada where they committed genocide against indigenous people to make Canada. Like, the birth of this country is murdering a group of people. So there's no, this freedom of speech, this concept, this idea does not exist in any of these countries.
Freedom of speech, if you can pay for it. And he who pays the piper picks the tune.
Rich people get the freedom of speech.
And when you mentioned DS9, it made me think of a great union man, Miles O'Brien.
Yes, that's right. That's right. The everyman, Miles O'Brien, the union man. Like, everyone was kind of represented on that show, right? Like, and yeah, Miles O'Brien was the union man. He was always that guy. He was the blue collar worker union man. Yeah.
And you mentioned the important colonial part of our history of colonial policies meant to genocide our First Nations people, residential schools, yeah. land grab. Yeah. And the land back movement is something that I'm hearing now from, and I would just like to say I am a witness, and I'd like yeah. to think of myself as an ally, but I am not an Indigenous person. But the land back movement, I'm trying to get my mind around that. And I've been listening. I listened to Land Back Canada Land, and it had a lot of different First Nations people from across the country saying what land back means to them. And we talked about this before the show, and you brought up the point about self-governance. And also yeah. the thing that really stuck me was that where I live here on the Upper Canada Treaty, if we were really respecting treaty rights, the local Indigenous people would still be able to feel safe hunting and fishing. And there yeah. would be a process for that. But with the implementation of the private property system and all the changes brought about by colonialism, we're really going to have to work together to reimagine a better future. Can you just tell us about your podcast, Uncolonize? And what does uncolonize mean to you?
It's kind of that. I mean, for it used to be, used to have another name, but we changed it to uncolonize years ago. But basically, like, I don't think it's a word. Like, I know decolonize is a word, but uncolonize. But to me, it's like, it's kind of like the land back, I guess, in the sense that it's like, there's this concept, like we're living in a social construct created by people who own the country, who stole the country. My parents are from the Caribbean. There was a time when their music would be like, oh, that's weird. It's like, it's not normal. It's not the, it's all, you know what I mean? It's just that concept yeah. of who you are and what your identity is. Isn't right compared to the what the status quo says is right. I get a lot of, sometimes I'll get white people who like, they'll get information from me or something, an idea, and they don't believe me, and they have to like, it's the idea of like, you can't take knowledge from me. Like you, do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to say? Is this this concept of like, whiteness has to co-sign or is in charge of everything, and everything should go through that lens.
As a white person, I view it, I think everything you, I agree with everything you say. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it's economic. It's like the billionaire economic power is mm-hmm. deciding things. And those of us that aren't rich, we need to be liberated, but also we need to become multicultural and aware. One of the interesting things I heard on a podcast from the United States, Philadelphia, after I believe it was Breonna Taylor was murdered by police and then George mm-hmm. Floyd was murdered by police, there were street demonstrations, people demanding mm-hmm. change. There was a police crackdown. The police were rounding people up, and in the back of a paddy wagon was a reporter and then a bunch of people that were there demonstrating. And he said that the conversation as they were driven to the detention center to be processed and let go was really insightful. And there was an older Black gentleman who'd been in the social rights movement from the 60s. And he said, yeah. what's different now than in any time in his previous 50, 60 years of doing this is that it's every community is out there trying to support each other. Now, it might not be like that everywhere, but you're seeing, and I see this in Ontario, the Idle No More movement and the Black Lives Matter movement really support each other. And it seems to yes. me that there's more multicultural support. I grew up in Waterloo Region. When I was a young kid, non-English people culture would adopt an English name. Yeah. And there wasn't a lot of BIPOC representation or people in the community. It was there, but it wasn't like it is now. Now, 30, 40 years later, there's people that are proud to have their Indigenous name from wherever they are in the world. And I see so much growth, and I think our diversity makes us strong, but it is a painful yes. process to get there because change is a challenge.
Well, I agree, but like Canada is a great country because like recently O'Toole was kicked out of the Conservative government as leadership because he was too progressive. And there's a positive thing in that because 75% of Canadians agree that, you know, the vaccine is real and it's helpful. 75% believe in a woman's body autonomy. And it was something else. Like Canadians are pretty progressive, and the Conservative Party is like kind of behind the times. So they needed an O'Toole who kind of matches almost with the Liberals. But the Conservative Party is like, oh, we also believe in climate change. It's 75%. So the actual party is like so far behind what most Canadians want, which in a long way, what I'm trying to say is that it's like you said, like you see more groups going on protesting together, because I think we all understand the problem, the major problem is economics, but we can't like just start ignoring racism or it just because it helps the like a movement. We all see that we're under a boot and we all see that we're being separated or being controlled because of these other systems within this major system. And more people are educated on that, I think.
And we have to talk to each other, especially people from different backgrounds. The Pandemic mm-hmm. Show, we're proud to say that we are actively anti-white supremacist. And yeah. I might feel safe in my community, but if I hear BIPOC people telling me they're not safe, I have to listen to that and I have to figure out how to support them. We were very lucky to
That's a major thing.
And people have to feel listened to. And
yes,
voices from all the different communities have to be at the table somewhere. And Lisa Humber has impacted me greatly. Lisa Humber was the stage manager with Come From Away. She joined us on the mm-hmm. Pandemic Show in season two. And she said mm-hmm. one of the things that her book club had been doing is 1 year they read all female authors. The next year they were reading all BIPOC authors. And it is important for all of us to educate ourselves and to dip our toes into other creative backgrounds so we can get a better sense of the world. Reading makes a difference. And there's nothing better than traveling. If you want to get rid of the
100%.
Of someone, put them in a different culture where they can see how beautiful it is and realize there's more than one way to approach how you
100%. Yes, how people see things or how they approach things. I remember when I was younger, I went to South Africa to do a comedy tour and I was making fun of one of the comics who was wearing like fake gold jewelry. I was very young, very stupid. And he's like, I can't wear real jewelry because I can get murdered. And it's just like, it wasn't a thing in my world. It's just not a thing where it's like very real in that. Like, it's very real in that world. It's like
that comedian, if he was wearing real jewelry, would be robbed.
Right.
Because of poverty.
Exactly. And there's people doing it all the time. And, you know, guns are a major thing there. And it was like, yeah, I didn't think of that. I grew up in a very sheltered life. So it wasn't a thing that I thought of.
And we hear that during the pandemic, as a result of poverty and desperation, street level mm-hmm. petty crime and robbery is going up. And I'm very grateful, Gavin, for you joining us here today on the pandemic.
Thanks for having me.
Stories of the pandemic for the people of the pandemic. No one's alone on the pandemic show. And I think if we want to reimagine the world and create the world based on justice for all and equity, we have to have more uncomfortable conversations. We have to create safe places where people from different perspectives can talk. Do you think that the Ottawa convoy was good in the sense that it got people from different perspectives talking? It kind of alarms me because it seems like they got exactly what they want, but they went about it in a totally inappropriate way, going after the federal government for provincial mandates, all of those types of things.
It was like their mandate, like when their manifesto was to overthrow the government. Like that's what they're meant. It was a recruitment drive for white nationalists. That's what it was. It was frustrating to me.
When I saw the Nazi flag, that alarmed me, knowing that my grandfather served in World War II to stand mm-hmm. up and to defeat fascism. And so many people have lost their lives. To see fascism coming back in the way that it is alarms me. In the same breath, it was good that I saw that flag there in Ottawa, because then I started learning about other hate symbols, because all the white supremacist groups from across Canada were there. And people on social media were educating people. So, it's a tough one. I was thinking, when are the cops going to start tear gassing these people? When is the action going to start? Because I remember the Free Trade Area of the America rally in Quebec City in 2001. Me and my friends were in a green zone, a peaceful place. Yeah. We were there in the spirit of International Labor and May Day. We were there for labor rights across America's environmental rights. And what happened? A few rowdies start shaking the fence and the whole area where there was thousands of us got tear gassed. And I was near some people in motorized wheelchairs and I watched them barely motorized wheelchair in front of this tear gas. And that was, I was in my early 20s.
Yeah.
And then I see some of this other stuff. Not everybody's getting treated equally, which is very telling.
Well, that protest is against status quo. The protest we saw in Ottawa was for status quo. It's like the police were on their team. The police were like, that's their people. When the rally or whatever, the trucker convoy started, it was so chaotic, right? They were destroying, vandalizing, destroying things. And then like a few days in, or like 5 days in, it became very organized. And they brought in the bouncy houses and stuff like that, which is also part of some, like, it's like PSYOP shit. But the people who were organizing it were like cops. There were cops who had to leave the force because they didn't have a vaccine. And another cop who used to be on Trudeau's like guard. These are cops running that thing. Whenever you have like arms of capitalism and business people, this is not a labor movement. This is a status quo. That's why all of a sudden, right after it, all the pandemic stuff is like, we're not talking, it's done. Everyone's on their own now. We're not even counting or measuring or doing anything. They listen to those people because that was status quo.
And I was just thinking today how much I want to go out and enjoy my life. I've looked at your schedule and I see that you have an upcoming tour starting with your Juno shows in Toronto. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're doing shows around Southern Ontario, St. Thomas, Kitchener. And I was thinking, hey, I really want to go see Gavin in Kitchener. And then I thought, okay, if I get COVID, I can't support my mom. I worry about making her partner ill.
Yeah.
And then there's a chill because I feel like they pulled the trigger on opening up a little too soon. And now we see like half my friends have COVID and their families, and the families with lots of kids, it takes even longer to go through.
Yeah, kids.
But you know what? I think it's going to be worth it to go out at the end of the month, end of May, to see you performing in Kitchener.
Just wear a mask. Wear your mask.
You're right. Wear a mask. Can you just tell us, Gavin, what are you looking forward to moving forward now that we do have a bit of a reopening, even though we are in the sixth wave?
I'm doing a bit about it, but I'm hoping people are less judgmental. Like people were like so kind in the beginning of COVID, like just kind of like understanding. I'm hoping that we get back to that kind of mentality where we got to help each other. That's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm looking for. And my anxiety going down as well. That's what I'm hoping.
Gavin, thank you so much for joining us here today. And I just want to say it's so exciting to get to talk to a stand-up comedian. Getting to talk to somebody that's brave enough to go up on stage, and having watched some of your club shows online, you really get into it with the audience in a positive way. It'll be exciting to see that as we move into the middle of the pandemic, because I think we all agree the end of the beginning has already occurred.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're like, yes, I think the middle is it sounded weird to me when you said it, but it's like, it makes sense. It's the middle of the pandemic.
Can you tell us what should we expect at the Junos this year? Gavin has been nominated for a Juno in the comedy division.
Yeah, comedy album, yeah.
And you're going to be doing a string of shows in Toronto.
Yeah, I have two shows for that weekend. They're Juno shows. So all the nominees, except one person, we're doing two shows at the Comedy Bar on May 13th. Yeah, at the Comedy Bar. So it should be fun. It should be a fun night.
And then after that, you're going out on the road in Southern Ontario.
Yeah. And then it's some out east later in the summer. I mean, it's like a slow ramp up to like fully touring. Yeah.
Well, Gavin, thanks so much for joining us here today on the Pandemic Show. Stories of the pandemic for the people of the pandemic. I hope too that we could talk again as we move through the middle stages of the pandemic.
Yeah, for sure. This is great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Pandemic Show. We're all in this together, and we're glad you're here together with us. Physically distance with us at pandemishow.com. Be a part of our community by subscribing to and sharing the Pandemic Show. Thanks for taking a minute to email an episode, share a link, or promote us on social media. Pandemic Show is on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. Stories from the pandemic for the people of the pandemic. Do you have an interesting pandemic story and want to share? Email us at pandemishow@gmail.com. Thanks to all our guests. Thanks to Giant Value for singing us in and letting us know everything is going to be all right. No one is alone at the Pandemic Show.